Blog Talk Radio.
Adams, Mason, Franklin, Gary, Ames, and Washington. Lee and Rutledge, Hancock, Wilson, White. Sherman, Adams, Hall, and Rodney, Penn, and Dickinson.
For the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence and the 37 who signed the Constitution.
And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. You haven't read all the bills you filed. We'd like for you to read them for yourself. Look around you, all you see are patriotic guys. Stroll around the land, the brave and free go home. And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Hiding all your $1 trillion debt so we don't know.
Hide it in your made-up FICA trust fund.
Just the congressmen will know. Worst of all, you pass this debt on to the kids. They think we're fools, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Ripping up our Constitution every afternoon.
Give themselves a raise with no debate.
Laughing at our founding fathers when they got to choose. Everything they warned us coming true. Where have you gone, Ron Wilson Reagan? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Woo, woo, woo. What's that you say, Mr. Jefferson? The Gipper has left and gone away. And we prayed, wish he stayed.
All right, everybody. It's Sunday night. Welcome aboard to the Fed Frank Show. And we've got a caller on the line already, so I'm going to bring that caller up. And if you'll hang tight with me, I'll bring you on here in just a second. I just have a couple of things I wanted to start with. You know, I really like that song by Mike Church. It's a parody, of course. And it talks about Mr. Jefferson, Mr. Madison, and even a mention of Ronald Reagan in there. But there's a whole lot of other folks that aren't mentioned, and with good reason. And, you know, if we look back and try to put your finger on the time frame when things really went downhill, it's very difficult for us today because what we're living in has always been around. The system of government that we're currently subjected to, we've lived with our whole lives. And what's described in our Constitution and the Constitutional Convention and the history of Washington and Madison and Jefferson and it's like a fairy tale to us. It really is. It's something that we yearn for, something that we long for. We know it existed, but we've never seen it in our lifetime. And if we do enough digging and struggle long enough, we begin to see many of the answers. And there were without a doubt, from the very founding, from the very outset, some real crummy ideas of what government should be. And fortunately, those crummy ideas didn't make it into the Constitution, because there was a group of men who staunchly defended individual rights and more important, or states' rights, and more importantly, individual rights. And the history has been revised in such a way that we don't know any better. And tonight, I'm going to work on helping to expose some of that history for the fraud that it is, and introduce you to a president that you probably never knew, didn't know existed. Oh, you know his name. You know Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator, the man who freed the slaves and kept saved the Union. But that's not really very accurate. And I think the reason that he's been portrayed the way he has will become painfully obvious as we move along. And who? What caller do we have? Who we got on the line?
Me, Sir Ron.
Mr. Robert, how are you, sir?
Well, according to Baba, I'm doing just fine.
Well, of course you are.
I'm doing just fine.
Did you attend his bar mitzvah?
I circumcised him.
It's an old Muslim tradition, I hear. Oh.
Oh, boy. I listened to Michael's show last night. That was pretty sad. I'm sorry about Robert Chapman. That was a powerful show last night.
Well, you know, you're right. It is. I know a lot of people are sad that Bob Chapman is gone. I would venture to say Bob Chapman's probably not among those people. You know, he's in a better place.
Yes, he is. He most certainly is.
And there's a lot of good ones that have been passing on.
I was hoping that Michael might put me on the show last night, but I guess it was you and Linda, but it didn't affect me. I wanted to say what really bothered me, what Michael said about himself, saying that he was a small, you know, man. It kind of ticked me off when he did that. But
well, I think I understand where Michael's coming from.
I know, but still, he did a great interview. That was a great interview he did.
You know,
I was very proud of Michael for doing that.
I wanted to start out tonight and share a little something with everybody, because it's really difficult many times to practice what we preach. It truly is. And I've been talking about not going after individuals, not hating individuals like Pelosi and Reed and Frank and others, but to pray for them and to actually love them. And it's difficult, but you know what? We really should find that in our hearts. And I failed a test today. I had to work today, and I was pretty torqued about having to work on a Sunday. Not because I celebrate it as God's Day or the Sabbath or, you know, anything like that. It's just I don't like working on Sundays, and my granddaughter was having her birthday party today. So I got to miss out on part of that. But I was just really angry. And the whole week has been rather bizarre. You know, it started out with this Ron Paul thing and Rand Paul endorsing Mitt Romney. And there was a lot of chatter and a lot of really torqued off people. And I think a lot of people really invested themselves in the idea that, you know, we really this time more than any other time had and still have an amazing opportunity at the Tampa convention. And so just all these things. And then in the midst of that, I'm reading this book about Abraham Lincoln and realizing just what an evil bastard he really was. Aside from all the deity that is thrust upon him. And so I'm on my way to work this morning. And there's a guy in traffic that's, you know, riding my tail and darting in and out of the lane. And I did something really bad. I drove the speed limit. And I drove the speed limit because I knew it would piss him off. Because I knew, for whatever reason, he was, you know, gung-ho gangbusters wanting to get around me. And finally, we get to a point in the road where he can get up beside me, and we caught a red light. And he pulls up and rolls his window down and starts shouting obscenities at me. And I rolled my window down and I smiled at him. And he told me he was going to kill me. And I picked up my 45 off the front seat and I said, "No, you're going to end up with a hole in your forehead if you don't shut the hell up." And he just kept saying, "Bring it on, bring it on." And you know, he drove off all ticked off. And it stuck with me all day. I was wrong. I was dead wrong. What I should have done is not messed with him to begin with. But aside from that, I should have just told him, "God bless you. And have a nice day.
I forgive you."
I understand. But the point is, it bothered me all day long because, yeah, he was wrong, but so was I. My reaction was just as wrong.
Well, that's how they want you to react.
Well, I recognize
that. But when you're driving in traffic and someone's trying to barrel you over, you cannot help but not keep cool, calm, and collected, Ron. I mean, I drive in traffic almost every day.
Well, I stayed very calm, and I meant every word that I told him. I really did. You know, he was shouting obscenities at me and told me, you know, he said, "Don't you ever drive in front of me. I'm going to kill your ass. I'm going to, you know," and I said, "Really? I don't think you are. Don't get out of your car, dude. You're gonna have your forehead ventilated with my 45.
Well, that's a true definition of a socialist.
But, you know, I guess the bigger point is there that, you know, we should put into practice what we're preaching. And what I should have done is said, you know, I'm sorry, and God bless you. Have a good day. That wouldn't have changed his attitude, I don't believe, but it might have. You never know. He might have stopped and thought about it afterwards. I don't know. But
telegators, you know, are telegators, though. I mean, you know, telegators.
You know, every day we have tests, and we don't always recognize them until after they're passed. And I think it's important that we pay attention.
Well, that's true. I wake up every morning and say to myself every morning, "Who's gonna mess with me today? Who's gonna make me have a bad day today?"
Well, sure. And you know, you have, Robert, you have intimated to me more than one time that you're a marked man or a persecuted man, and I understand that. And, you know, I think a lot of us at one time or another feel the same way. We feel like we're being persecuted for some reason or another. Many times I think that persecution is our own shortcomings, our own bad attitude coming back to bite us in the butt. Karma, if you will. You know, some people call it karma.
Sure.
I totally believe what goes around comes around, you know.
Well, those type of people, especially the ones that run our government, will have their day. Sooner or later, it's going to catch up with them.
Well,
I listen to Linda. She's right on the money, and she goes, it's going to come back. Like you just said, it's going to come back to bite them. It's going to bite them. I mean, I was listening to the news all day today. And I was listening to Axl Rod, and I was listening to, everybody giving their graduation speeches today, and it totally nauseated me. It got me to the point where I couldn't even study for my second test. Why is it to myself? Why am I beating my brains out?
Well, you know, you're right, and I am sure, and I have full faith that, one day it will come back to bite them. But there are many times that I feel like, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners feel like we feel like those that are underneath the throne in Revelation, crying out, how long, O Lord, how long? How long do we have to suffer the abominations before you pour out your wrath?
I mean, it's just like, Ron, it's just, I had such a tough month, with my wind flood, and then I had excess liability, and then my medical insurance went from $429 to $509 a month without a warning. I told that to Bill Strong Tuesday, and I had such a bad month financially, and I just thought to myself, how do people, a family of four, I'm making $50,000 a year, and how many people with a family of four can really afford, two kids, everything else in the matter, and here I am crying the damn blues like a stupid, I just think to myself, my God, the only conclusion that I could come up with is that I went to a dance Friday night for the highly functioning people, you met Kathy, and I went to their Dancing of the Stars, and it was just all these people with all these mental disorders there, right? So but Ron, my point is, here I am. I'm just absolutely complaining to myself that I had a bad month financially, and I see all these families with their disabled kids, there was at least like maybe 300 people there, or maybe five. It was a big crowd, and we had dinner with them and everything. And I said to myself, all right, I was trying to figure out every disorder they basically had with my training that I've had so far, and I was just like flipping out. And I said to myself, you look to your left, you look to the person to the left of you, and you look to the person to the right of you, and I guarantee you they're worse off than you are. So, we're here on the show talking every night about this administration. I get a call from ALF-CIO, and I never had anybody ever call me from ALF-CIO in my life from Washington, D.C. So one day I'm going to recall on a call, asking them why they called me, just to get it off my chest. And I just sit there in amazement. You know, Saturday night, just watching those people Saturday night, smiling, having a great time, like nothing's bothering them, was just truly amazing. It just broadened my horizon. So the point I'm trying to make, I know times are tough, but you know, maybe we should just stop this arguing and just go on with our lives and let those guys kill each other.
Well, I understand that, and part of what you're saying reminds me of an old story about the little bird that put off flying south for the winter until it was too late.
Yeah.
And his wings froze up and he crashed to the earth. And he was dying. He was shivering and frozen. And a cow came along and crapped on him. And it was nice and warm and it thawed him out. And man, he was feeling pretty good. And he started chirping and singing. And a cat heard him and came along and ate him.
Oh, God.
And the moral of the story is, when you're warm and happy in a pile of crap, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah,
I've never been one to keep my mouth shut, and I've never been one to go along to get along. I try to recognize the gifts and the blessings every day. I don't always see them. That's part of what was weighing on my heart with this test that I failed today.
Wow.
You said something there about this administration.
Right.
And I'm going to disagree with you on this administration, because I know a lot of people like to blame this administration. But we have to be honest. We have to be honest and truthful with ourselves. We want to blame this administration because, as administrations go, they're the enemy because they're Democrats or liberals or progressives. But I think what many people fail to see is that they've oversimplified the problem, and they don't see their side, the Republican or conservative side, as just as progressive and just as much the problem as the other side. And that's really, you know, part of what I wanted to go into tonight. It really didn't start with Lincoln. I've made the statement before that before the ink was dry on the Constitution, the founders set about violating it. And the first violation was at the urging of a man named Alexander Hamilton. And Hamilton had this ideology, this plan. What Hamilton wanted, even what he argued for during the Constitutional Convention, what he argued for was a monarchy and a lifetime appointment of the president. And of course, we just fought a war to get it from under the monarchy, and there weren't too many takers on his ideology. He may have been a very good speaker, and he was pretty smart, but I have to wonder what his affection or connection was with the ideology of a monarchy. And knowing his history, that he grew up in banking and finance, his first real job was at a counting house on St. Croix for a banker. It seems to me that his motivation was more monetary than it was honor, morality, scruples. But even so, even he had a level to which he would not go past, he wouldn't go beyond. And one of those was, of course, the idea that a state could be brought to the federal bar and sued by the newly formed federal government, even though he wanted a all-powerful national government, with the states being subservient to that national government, what later became the Federalists, and then, of course, the Hamiltonians, and then it transformed itself into the American system, which is what Henry Clay argued for, and many others, all the way through. The true constitutionalists, the true small government guys, like Jefferson, like Madison, and many, many others, they had to fight tooth and nail every single day against these guys. And really the picture that comes into view when you really start putting all of this together, and for me really came together reading what took place under Lincoln. And under Lincoln, what really happened was, for the first time in the history of our country, they had the opportunity to actually implement the American system. And so Lincoln had the presidency, and his party, the newly formed Democratic Republicans, had the Senate, and they had a good number in the House, and they were able to institute the American system. And the whole crux of the American system is pretty simple. The idea of the American system, or the Hamiltonian system, is that all the money in the country from all the several states would flow into the federal government, and then from there the congressmen, the elected officials, would use that money, appropriate that money for internal improvements to pay back their campaign contributors, their supporters. And in doing that, they would secure their dominance in politics forever, because the only people that could vote, you had to be property owner. Okay, you had to own some property, and they were going to see to it that these guys got all the property they wanted. It didn't matter if the federal government had to steal it at gunpoint from the rightful owners. That didn't matter. And I don't think a lot of people recognize that. I don't think a lot of people knew that. You know, there was, after the war, during Reconstruction, there was a guy from Illinois. His name was Henry Clay Warmoth. And he was elected governor of Louisiana. Now, how an Illinois native gets elected governor of Louisiana is anybody's guess, right? Well, the way that happens is that Louisiana is not a state anymore. It's under martial law. And no one in Louisiana can run for governor if they're a native of Louisiana, because clearly they were assisting in the rebellion. So they held bogus elections. They put up these bogus candidates to run and were appointed. And it was, I mean, this guy is just one example. He had an annual salary of $8,000 a year. And in 4 years, in serving one four-year term, he amassed over $1 million in wealth on an $8,000 a year salary. You got to wonder, how does that happen? It certainly doesn't happen with integrity or honesty. He was not a public servant. He was there to line his own pockets. We've also all heard of the Congressional Black Caucus. And I found the first instance of a Congressional Black Caucus. And surprisingly enough, it occurred in Florida. And the reason it occurred was because the going rate for a bribe for a legislator was $300 per vote. And it says in Florida, during the latter years of Reconstruction, black state legislators were being discriminated against. The bribes they were being offered to vote for railroad subsidies and the like were smaller than the bribes paid to white legislators. They convened a black caucus in which they fixed the price of their bribes at roughly the same price being charged by the white legislators.
Wow.
I mean, these people, they were not shy about the fact that they were selling their votes to the highest bidder. Not remotely.
Things really haven't changed, have they?
They have not changed a moment. Do you know where the term? Do you know where the term lobbyist originated?
No, I really don't.
Ulysses.
I've always wondered about that.
Ulysses S. Grant coined the term.
Really?
Yep. U.S. Grant. They said U.S. stood for unconditional surrender. And that goes back to a story with a good friend of his that he attended West Point with. But U.S. Grant called them lobbyists. And the reason he called them lobbyists is because they sat around in hotel lobbies waiting for their turn to go speak to the president to offer him bribes for his favors.
That's pretty interesting. Now, I'm trying to look at these pictures that I have of all of the presidents of the United States. For some reason, I don't see President Hamilton at all on this thing at all.
He wasn't president.
He wasn't president, okay.
Nope. Hamilton was the first Treasury Secretary under George Washington.
So, that's why. That's what I was wondering.
Hamilton made the argument for a central bank, a national bank, before the Congress and the president. And his argument, in effect, was the Constitution does not prohibit it. Now, they all knew full well there is a rule at law that wherever the law is silent on a subject, then it's acceptable. It's permissible. However, when they drafted the Constitution, it was an antithesis of the norm. And what I mean by that is it was opposite of the normal. The Constitution only allowed what was expressly written in the document. Anything that it was silent on was prohibited. And they knew that.
That's interesting. Because that's how Obamacare got through, right?
Well, no, how Obamacare got through is we've been living under a system of government, the American system, since the presidency of Abraham Lincoln. And the guy was an evil bastard. I just don't know how else to say it. You know, Linda and I were talking in the chat room earlier, and I said quite literally, they need to exhume his body, put him on trial for treason posthumously, have him executed, and his bones cremated to ashes. He was that much of a bastard. The author of the book that I'm currently reading refers to Lincoln as America's Stalin.
Wow.
And if you truly read through what was done, both before, during, and after the war, you get a really good picture of just what a bastard he was. And it's funny because the liberal revisionist historians, they speak very eloquently of Lincoln. But when it comes to the actions of Sherman and others, you know, in Atlanta, outside Atlanta, all through Mississippi, and the Shenandoah Valley. They say, well, you know, Lincoln, that wasn't him, that was his generals, and he couldn't very well, you know, be right there with them every day and you know, oversee their policies. However, in the same breath, they'll tell you that he absolutely micromanaged every aspect of the war and was in constant contact daily, sometimes hourly, with his commanders in the field, and he even slept at the telegraph office many nights.
Wow.
So he was absolutely a micromanager. And they knew full well that they were carrying out his wishes. I mean, there's just there can't be any question of it.
That was a terrible battle, the Battle of Shenandoah Valley.
Well, the battle really wasn't even a battle because everyone had fled. It wasn't a battle. They went through the Shenandoah Valley and literally demolished everything that was standing. Women, children, old men, houses, churches, it didn't matter. It was a scorched earth policy. And it was actually a policy of Lincoln to start waging war against civilians or non-combatants. And that began in 1863, and that's the reason he had the Lieber Code written, to justify his violation of the Geneva Convention, which took place that same year, just a few months earlier.
Hey, Ron, is that where the carpetbaggers come into fruition?
Well, the carpetbaggers come in during Reconstruction, and it's because they were, it was so horrible. I was reading through some of this stuff. It was terrible. They absolutely ransacked the South after the war. It was already pillaged. Many of the soldiers even wrote, and if you've watched, you know, like the Ken Burns series on the Civil War, you know, they said there was one scene in particular where the guy says, you know, a rabbit jumped out, and the old boy said, "Run, old hare, I'd run too if I was a rabbit." The reason he was saying that was because there was scarcely a living thing alive in the South. When they rode into towns or farms, whatever they couldn't take with them, they killed. They shot the dogs. They shot the animals. I mean, they murdered everything. They didn't want these people to be able to survive. They wanted them to starve.
I just learned the other side of the coin of the Civil War.
What's that?
That the Yankees just didn't give a rat's, you know what, about nothing. They just went in there and just did whatever they did.
And let me tell you, it was anybody that thinks that the war was about slavery is they're delusional. They need to go read the real history. And I don't say that to be racist. Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation did not emancipate a single slave. Not a single one. The Union troops were holding slaves in captivity, and the Emancipation Proclamation only applied in certain areas of the country. Lincoln put many stipulations on it, kind of like signing statements on an executive order type of thing. He was the first one to invoke the otherwise mysterious war powers that were invested in the Constitution. That was his reasoning for going to war in the first place, that he didn't have to go to Congress. Congress didn't have to make a declaration of war because it wasn't a war. It was a rebellion. And he was using his powers as commander-in-chief, his quote-unquote war powers, to put down an internal rebellion. And therefore, he didn't need the approval of Congress.
Oh, where did we hear that?
Mm-hmm.
All these
people out there that listen to Ron Paul and he talks about, you know, undeclared wars, this is why. This is why he talks about these things. And everybody says he's crazy. They think he's nuts. No, he's not nuts. He's trying to tell you something. He's trying to get... See, he knows this. He understands this. And he's trying to reckon with people and reason with people that, look, if you want to get back to the government we were intended to have, we got to get rid of this. We got to get rid of all of it. And it's been entrenched in our government for a very, very long time.
That's what we call a statistics, a continuous variable. You know, it's just continuing.
Now, if we talk about, and do you know that Virginia used to be all one state? It wasn't West Virginia and Virginia, all one state. It was split into West Virginia because the Union troops had a stronghold there, and Lincoln needed more votes.
I didn't quite catch it.
Lincoln needed more votes. You know, West Virginia is the only state that was never ratified as a state by Congress.
Really?
It was never
voted in
as a state. He took an existing state, split it, and created a whole new state out of whole cloth, all through executive order, without Congress signing off on a bit of it. We were talking about the Shenandoah Valley. General Sheridan is the one that rode through Shenandoah.
It says
Sheridan and his 35,000 infantry troops plus three divisions of cavalry faced no military opposition at all and proceeded to terrorize the women, children, and old men of the valley in Sherman-esque fashion. Reporting from the town of Woodstock, Virginia, on October 6, 1864, Sheridan informed Grant that his army had destroyed over 2,200 barns filled with wheat, hay, and farming implements, over 70 mills filled with flour and wheat, had driven in front of the army over 4,000 head of livestock, and have killed and issued to the troops not less than 3,000 sheep. Tomorrow, I will continue the destruction.
Wow, that's a great book. I need to read that.
A federal officer reported that in the aftermath of Sheridan's army, the atmosphere from horizon to horizon has been black with the smoke of 100 conflagrations, and at night a gleam brighter and more lurid than sunset has shot from every verge. The completeness of devastation is awful. Hundreds of nearly starving people are going north. Our trains are crowded with them. They line the wayside. Hundreds more are coming, so stripped of food that I cannot imagine how they have escaped starvation.
Wow. And
this is their own government doing this to them.
Yeah, I know. And then listening to Bob Chapman last night, I missed it the first time, but listening to him last night, it's just like he basically rewrote history again.
There's another quote in here, and I actually heard this from Shelby Foote. Grant ordered General Philip Sheridan to make one more trip down the valley, pillaging, plundering, and burning everything in sight. Carry off stock of all descriptions, and Negroes, so as to prevent further planting. Grant instructed Sheridan, anything that could not be consumed by the army was to be destroyed. The land was to become so devastated, Grant ordered, that crows flying over would need to pack their own lunch.
Wow.
This wasn't just about slavery. This, they wanted to punish these people. And what it was an absolute split in our government between the constitutional republic and what we would call today the progressive liberal ideology.
That's basically what was describing as martial law too, right?
Oh, the whole country was martial law. the entire country, the whole of the United States of America at that time was under martial law. One congressman who had cojones the size of beach balls spoke out in Congress.
Sorry, Laura.
And he was put in prison by Lincoln, in a military prison without trial, without charges, for 2.5 years.
Oh, my God.
Simply because he criticized Lincoln's policies as being unconstitutional and evil. And Lincoln was having none of that. We've got Miss Linda on the line. How are you, Miss Linda?
Oh, fine, sir. How are you? And thank you for doing this. And I'm going to order that book because I'm reading, the author I'm reading left out everything you said. Basically, he was looking at it from a different angle, and he wanted to pretty much educate the public on all of the people who were black people at the time after the Civil War who actually were Congress people and what they had to fight for, you know, voting rights for people and civil rights, et cetera, which there's a lot of good information in there. But I think that the book that you're speaking of, and that I have it saved up on my website today, and I'll try to get that one because it's going to probably fill in every blank that this book leaves out. When you talk about the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. as it stands today, and I agree with you, maybe it should be crumbling, kind of like, you know, the crumbling Tower of Babel. And maybe it's time for the entire section of that 10-mile radius of D.C. We should start ordering a fire engine and other grains to take care of that problem.
Well, you know, it's so it's so disheartening because, you know, as I read through this, I was becoming furious. I could only read a chapter or two, and I'd have to put it down. I was getting so mad. But, you know, I got to take a step back and realize that, you know, number one, this is history. It's in the past. But it's all part of how we got to where we're at today.
Right.
And, there's been such a cloth of lies woven together.
Right. Oh, my God. Well,
much of it out of absolute.
We've been lied to so thoroughly for so long, you can't even separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. It's just mind-boggling. And what I think happened when you're doing what you're doing and you're researching this for us and you're putting the pieces together, then we're seeing this pattern of, you know, day by day, and when the founders died and then Lincoln gets in and this goes on and the Libra Code goes on and the evilness. What happens when you do that and you destroy the American idea of what it was, what it should be and what it could be, and I think what it was supposed to be, then you open the door to every faction out there that wants to, you know, take over. And that's what they've done. It's taken them a long time, Ron, that every commie, every Islamist, every nut job, every Enviro Wacko, every Maurice Strong and Cass Sunstein now has a toehold because of what happened in the past. So you've got to link this together.
Absolutely. And, I'm sitting here reading about Atlanta, and, you know, that said once Sherman occupied Atlanta, he began waging war on civilians in southern towns and cities for more than 2 years, and his troops were well-practiced. The city was bombed day and night until barely a house or building remained untouched. When Sherman's chief engineer, O.M. Poe, voiced his dismay at seeing so many corpses of women and young children lying in the streets of Atlanta,
Great.
Sherman coldly told him that such scenes were, quote, a beautiful sight, because they would bring the war to a quicker end. Poe believed, moreover, that the bombardment of the city of Atlanta had no military purpose and did not advance the Federal Army's move into the city by a single second. There are no accurate casualty accounts, but many eyewitness accounts tell of large numbers of civilians, including slaves, being killed and maimed. Now, this next portion will give you an idea of the mentality. After destroying much of the city, Sherman's army went on its usual binge of looting and burning. Even the cemeteries were looted, with graves dug up and carcasses stripped of jewelry and valuables.
Good God.
There were approximately 4,000 private homes in the city of Atlanta before the bombardment, and about 400 were left standing afterwards.
That sounds like something Genghis Khan would have done.
And he planned it and timed it
for
the beginning of the onset of winter.
Good grief.
Nice guy. Now, what we don't know, what I didn't know, I'll say, I won't say we, because many of you may have known it. At the very same time that all this is going on, there was something else going on in the West. There was an order that had gone out to murder, and I will use that term because it's exactly what it was, to murder the Plains Indians.
Oh my God.
The reason that he wanted all the Plains Indians murdered, not just relocated, he wanted them dead, out of the way, was because they were implementing some of their American system, which was to build a railway from the coast all the way to California.
Wow.
And the only way that they could do it, with all these government subsidies, you know, they had all these Indians in the way, you don't have to pay them, just kill them.
Oh, my God. Lovely. You know, man's inhumanity to man just keeps marching on, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, it's interesting because there was a gentleman who actually had built a railway all the way to the West Coast, privately, without any government funding.
Wow.
And, you know, he came in on budget, on time, and was far more efficient than the Union Pacific Railway that the government subsidized. And as a matter of fact, the government told the railway with their subsidies, they got paid $12,000 for every mile of track they laid on flat, straight ground. They got paid $28,000 a mile for every mile of track they laid on hilly ground, and $48,000 a mile for every mile of track they laid in the mountains.
Good grief.
And one of the problems they ran into was that every elected official wanted the railroad to pass through their town, their constituency, their corner of the earth.
Oh.
So you can imagine what that railway looked like.
Oh, my God.
And they actually laid track on top of the snow and the ice, and then it would melt, and they'd have to go back and fix it. And guess what? They got subsidies for that, too.
Well, you know, what we say about today's situation is the same back then. When the government subsidizes something, you get less of it. Or taxes it, you know, you get less of it. And the other thing is, every time the government touches something, it turns earth. Every time they meddle, they meddle. I'm so sick of the meddling. There's no integrated powers anymore, Ron. That's the problem.
I understand. And I want to address a comment that's in the chat room from Rounder. It says, but how did we get Japan to surrender? The scorched earth idea. Break their will to fight. The Romans did it too. I agree 100%. There's one big difference. These were our own countrymen. They weren't our enemy. They weren't the Japanese. They weren't the Koreans. They were our fellow countrymen. They were the sovereigns of this country. They were the very people that created the government that turned on them,
right,
was murdering
yep.
them. And that is an
yep.
absolute distinction.
And it's abominable. Yeah, and that's it's about to happen again. And like what Bob Chapman was reiterating on Michael's rebroadcast, you know, they're about to do it again, and there will be a revolution in this country if they pull this, because there will be so many people waking up overnight, you know. And like I said, and I know you probably haven't seen your emails, but, you know, this, the idea that they can do the NDAA and the internment and this and that and the other, you know, and Bob was saying that even though they have the might and the power and the money, they're, you know, the the majority of the Oath Keepers are not going to turn on their own fellow citizens. So these people are going to lose. I know they're going to lose against God in the end, but are they going to lose in the natural? That was kind of my question. In other words, are there enough of us?
You know, I don't know. And I got to tell you, I mean, nothing. There is absolutely nothing in our recent history that even approaches what was done under Lincoln. I mean, granted, we can talk about all the different things that, you know, the current and previous administrations have done that are deplorable and tyrannical, but they pale in comparison.
Oh, this is something out of the Middle Ages. I mean, this is just, in fact, when I read what Stalin did, that sounds much, I can understand why they made the equation that Lincoln
absolutely
was Stalin. Absolutely. Because that's what he did. Oh, talk about scorched earth. It was, how many, 30, 35 million? They can't even count them all. Every historian has tried. You know, that's the closest number they can come to. It was, I was crying when I read that book, you know, what they did to these people, innocent people,
and then starving them
to death in the Ukraine in 1 year. Unbelievable. 5 million of them.
And
on
guess
purpose.
Where? And guess where they got their inspiration?
Oh, probably from, well, Plato's Republic and Karl Marx, but I guess from Lincoln too. But and Genghis Khan. I don't know. Mao. Jesus, they're all evil. Oh, unbelievable. This is nothing new. You know, it's just, as we know, we're fighting this battle since Garden of Eden, so we've just got to keep doing. And like I said in the chat room, the people I'm up against in City Hall here in my own town, I don't hate them, Ron. I'm trying to expose them. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. And you know, I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, and I've always brought that subject up only because I want to make sure that everyone's listening and that we don't lose sight of that. Because as evil as this crap is, it's real, real easy to lose sight of that. Just like it's real easy to lose sight of your humility when some jerk pulls up next to you and starts, you know, threatening that he's going to kill you.
What you need is, you don't have to say a word. What you need is a small little sign in big letters and hold it up to him in the window and says, "Is your house on fire?" Really piss him off.
You know,
and,
Ron, Ron,
sure.
you know what I learned from Bob Chapin? I mean, last night, it's the whole Michael's interview with him. There's the two key words in that whole thing, whole interview that stuck with me. And that was psychological warfare.
Sure.
That just left a sour taste in my mouth.
But that's
Robert, Hitler did a real bang up job with that stuff, believe me. Did Stalin.
Me growing up in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, Linda, you know, we're baby boomers. When I look back at it, like in retrospect, you know, I can see how psychological warfare came into play because it was used on me, so to speak. You know, it was used on me all my life.
Hey guys,
go ahead, Ross.
Well, I was going to say, I finish your thought, and then I want you guys to hang with me for a minute if you can, and I want to play another little song for everybody.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, for 50 years I was told that I wasn't going to make it. You know. That's basically psychological warfare. They do it to all these kids who are disabled, so to speak. You know, and they basically ruin a lot of people's lives doing all this crap. crap to people. Excuse me. I'm sorry. If I get fired, I get fired off the show.
No, and you know, Robert, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the way that we do this, and everyone does it, everyone. I do it myself. You know, get is charged. We find something about someone else that we don't like. And once we've determined that we don't like that individual, whether it's because of how they look or how they act or how they dress or whatever it may be, we then begin to formulate in our mind reasons to justify taking action against them and harming them in some way or another. And we justify it to ourselves in our own minds. We justify our behavior, and it's not justifiable. It's horrible.
Right.
But
it is.
I'm going to put you all on mute for just a minute and play this song, and this goes out to Miss Linda and Mr. Robert and Bill Strong and all the Patriots, and Oz, you as well, young man. This one is called Patriots Won't Take It.
Quantity and no quality will be discipline.
They call the passage of this bill Armageddon. And freedom as we know it.
Patriots won't take it. No.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. That's awesome. That's from Mike Church. He's on Sirius Satellite Radio, and I hope you guys get a chance to give him a listen. He's on every weekday morning, and the guy has got it. He is spot on it. He's not a talking head. He knows his stuff. And
you know, what Robert's final thought, the other segment, was talking about psychological warfare. Well, this has been the heat turned up on us in the last 4 years, and I know it's been going on a lot longer, but it's on steroids right now. And with Chas Sunstein and the EPA, I mean, look what they're doing with Agenda 21. They're firing up their, you know, they're killing the coal plants, but they're firing up their windmills, and they're coming at us unbelievable. I mean, they're trying to push this stuff through, and you know, we've got to expose the truth to people. And I don't care whether it's a city council mayor or whatever, or the general public.
Well, you know, I agree. And I think the message, and I wish I could get the ear of the Tea Party. One of the higher ups in the Tea Party, Jenny Beth Martin, is a customer at my store. And I tried to have conversation with her. And she was polite, but she didn't want to hear it. She didn't want to hear about Agenda 21. She didn't want to hear about anything other than, you know, they've got this narrow-focused agenda, and taxes seem to really bring out the hackles in people. And I understand that. But I think the larger picture, what the Tea Party should be all about has to be all about what we have to be all about.
Right.
Is restoring the form of government that was authorized in the Constitution and revert all of this crap that has been instituted, excuse me, and largely instituted under Lincoln.
My God.
And if you want to understand the monetary system and why I see that as the single biggest key, and Lincoln knew it. Lincoln knew, as did the others. Hamilton knew it. So did Andrew Jackson. They knew that once you got the national banking system in place, you really didn't need the big military to threaten everybody. You didn't have to go, you know, scorched earth policy. And I want to read you this next excerpt, and it's under the title of A National Banking System at Last. As of 1861, the central government was completely divorced from the country's banking system, despite decades of agitation for a nationalized banking system by the Hamiltonians, the Whigs, and the Republicans. There was no central bank, and the only legally recognized money was gold or silver coins. The nation's currency consisted solely of state-chartered banknotes redeemable in gold or silver on demand. Historians have long argued that this system created an unacceptable degree of financial instability. But this argument is a myth. It was, in fact, the best, the most stable monetary system the United States ever had. No monetary system is perfect, and there were bankruptcies, but most of these losses were the result of government regulation in the form of prohibition on branch banking, mandates for minimum specie gold and silver reserves, restrictions on the issue of small denomination banknotes, and requirements that banks purchase state bonds. Requirements that were especially unwise when the bonds were issued to finance internal improvement boondoggles. On February 25, 1862, Lincoln signed into law the Legal Tender Act that empowered the Secretary of the Treasury, Salmon P. Chase, to issue paper money printed in green ink, known as greenbacks. The greenbacks were not immediately redeemable in gold or silver, but were backed by a governmental promise to do so in the future. After the war, Chase became the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court and ruled the greenbacks to be unconstitutional.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It says the National Currency Acts of 1863 and 1864 created a system of nationally chartered banks that could issue banknotes supplied to them by the newly created comptroller of the currency. In addition, a prohibitive 10% tax on state banknotes was imposed to help create a federal monopoly on money. Lincoln recruited financier Jay Cook to take out and pay for newspaper ads throughout the country, denouncing the private state-chartered banking system while praising the Republican plan for nationalizing the nation's money supply.
Good God.
The government's paper money flooded private banks so that the amount of money in circulation doubled in the first year. The consequent inflation was so severe that by July 1864, greenback dollars were worth only 35 cents in gold.
I remember that.
Unbelievable. Well,
I remember that history. Wow.
So I guess my question would be, let's say, for instance, if the idiot Mitt Romney, or as I call him, Mitten, decides to fire his stupid campaign advisors and hire Scott Walker's campaign advisors and does something intelligent and get rid of John McCain on his team and actually wins this, what do we do to give him a message that we're not going to take the same old, you know, the slow road to serfdom as opposed to the Obama fast track to serfdom? How do we get that message to this guy?
I don't know that he really gives a damn. I mean, I'll just be honest. I don't think that he does. This is one of the things that I've tried to point out previously.
Yes.
And why I was so staunchly behind Ron Paul, because
exactly.
He seems to be the only one that gets the idea that the only way to fix what's broken
is
to eliminate it. And what's broken is what doesn't comport with our Constitution, the government that the Constitution created. And anything that's outside of that is wrong and part of
it's
the problem.
Done. Yeah.
And Mittens has no qualms and has stated numerous times that he has he doesn't feel compelled to monkey about with the Federal Reserve, and he believes that it should stay a private entity and that there shouldn't be any audits or anything. We just let the Fed do what the Fed does. They know best.
The only thing that I can say in favor of Romney is he doesn't hate white people. he doesn't hate colonialism. And, you know, he believes in traditional marriage. That's it. I mean, that's as far as I can see. You know, the other one is way off the charts. I mean, he's on Jupiter as far as lefty.
Well, and you know, to me, this whole argument of colonialism is a paper tiger because quite literally what the progressives and the Obama crowd embrace is the very system that Hamilton and, you know, Henry Clay and finally saw it come to realization of Lincoln. They embrace that system.
Right.
And the ideology is that the government becomes everything. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's I was going to read this clip from John Sherman, who was a senator from Ohio and one of the top, you know, pushers of the national banking system. And they said at least he was forthright and honest in the reasons he gave for the system. It would centralize power in Washington, which is to say, in his hands and in the hands of his Republican Party colleagues. He urged his congressional colleagues to nationalize as much as possible, even the currency, so as to make men love their country before their states. Does that sound familiar to anyone?
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, it was, let's go back. Let's rewind a minute and think of the words that are in the Pledge of Allegiance, because they are antithetical to our Constitution.
Mm.
You're pledging allegiance to a flag, one nation. It's not one nation. It's all free and independent nations, each state.
Yeah.
But the idea was to identity politics, get you to identify with the state, with the national state, with the federal government as being your country and not the state in which you reside.
That is top-down totalitarianism, and I hate it. Excuse my French, but I do. And it's not right, and it's not what Jefferson wanted. I know. I mean, everything he's ever said was antithetical to what they're doing today. I put in the chat room, if there was ever a person who should have been allowed to live as long as Noah, it would be Thomas Jefferson.
Here's another quote. This is an actual quote from Sherman. All private interests, all local interests, all banking interests, the interests of individuals, everything should be subordinate now to the interest of the government. Now, what the hell does that sound like to you guys?
Sounds like to me.
Sounds like government, bigger government.
It's the giant nanny state. It's the New World Order. It's the Agenda 21. It's the Maurice Strong's and the Cass Sunsteins and the Valerie Jarrett's all rolled into one, Ron. That's what it sounds like to me.
And this is the
sick
thing.
Of it.
And it makes me bang my head because I've known. I mean, this is the government we live in and have been living in since daggum 1860s.
I know.
And all these people running around waving their flag and saying they're free. and it's like, no, you're not. You don't get it.
I know.
You don't get it because you've never had it.
Hayek would agree with you. The Road to Serfdom guy. It's really, really sad that we have woken up so late in the game. But I really feel that it's not too late if we sound the alarms, you know what I mean, loud enough and strong enough. They went up against King George. Can we not do the same thing? I mean, I'm not advocating bloodshed, but if it comes, it comes. I mean, you and I don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if the UN troops are coming. Well, it sucks, but we've got to stand on principle.
I agree. And, the one, the one saving grace, the very principle that we ought to be standing on is the Constitution.
Absolutely. And the Declaration. And those unalienable rights. And that was in my speech. I don't know if you heard my archive, but when I... before I went to speak, I actually read my speech that I was going to give on the air. And my closing statement was quoted from you. And I told those people in that whole room, I said, I cannot relinquish these unalienable rights, even if I wanted to. They're not mine to negotiate. They're his. And I pointed to the sky. And then they knew I was mad.
It's non-negotiable.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And I want to give
and
a shout out.
Applause, too.
I want to give a shout out to my buddy Tom, the Togmaster. He just cruised into the room. So, Tom, good to have you around, brother.
Welcome.
They're talking about a guy who was Congressman Elbridge Spalding, an influential member of the House Ways and Means Committee and a New York banker, was just as honest as Senator Sherman was. On February 19, 1863, speaking on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, he argued that a nationalized banking system would help achieve the Hamiltonian system of a strong central government that could subsidize economic development by handing out subsidies to private corporations. Henry Clay himself could not have said it better.
Oh, my God. This is manifest destiny nonsense. This is what this is. This is not divine providence.
It, let me tell you, it manifest destiny doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of what they were. They didn't believe in any manifest destiny, so to speak. I'm telling you right now, this is all of the Hamiltonian ideologues stripped bare, okay, and standing naked before the people for the greedy, thieving bastards.
Mm-hmm.
That they truly are and were. Nothing's changed. They're just as greedy. And we know today, just as the people knew back then, that these guys aren't in it for us. They're in it for them. When you have an Illinois native appointed governor of Louisiana and he gets an $8,000 a year salary and in 4 years he's amassed $1 million+.
Yep, sounds like the same stuff's going on today. But
imagine
you know what,
that.
Ron? Yeah, I know. Like we say, nothing new under the sun. But, okay, now, your ideology, which has preceded Mr. Beck, and of not complying, is a very good argument to have, because I think that's going to be one of our tickets out of this mess. Because the more we push back and the more we stand up as a group or whatever, whether it's a neighborhood, a community, a state, or a county, and we push back and say, we're not doing this anymore. And that's what I'm about, and that's what Glenn did with his, you know, because they're saying you can't feed the homeless unless
yes.
you get permission. So he's got 11 tractor trailers already filled within 1 hour, and he's going to 11 cities and say, let them arrest us.
I pray to God he's coming to Atlanta.
What's going to happen?
Well, we've got a local pastor right here. His name's Harold Angel. He was arrested and put in jail for feeding the homeless downtown Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm sure that's one of the cities on the list. But you know what? He's also doing the lemonade stands, the hug-a-thon, and the bake sales just to put it in their faces. And they're doing it all over the country. I love it.
And the thing is, you know, it's not about feeding the homeless. That's a great thing.
Yes.
What it's about is the government doesn't want you doing it. They want to do it so that those people feel beholden to the damned government.
Well, yeah, and then they want to take all of our power away. It's all the giant nanny state, New World Order, whatever you want to call it. That's what it is, Ron, and you know that's what it is. It's all about they have all the power, we have none, and we're done with it. And so every time, believe me, when you hear my show on Wednesday, because I'm putting together a presentation that's going to come down on the 19th in the city council. If they didn't like my speech last time, they're going to really love me this time. Oh, my God, because laying it out.
Bill put a thing in the chat, said, stand back, I have a Bible and I know how to use it. And speaking of the Bible and reading through here, that we need a resurrection of a Democrat from Kentucky named Lazarus Powell. And this is a quote. The result of this course of banking legislation, Powell said, is utterly to destroy all the rights of the states. It is asserting a power which, if carried out to its logical result, would enable the National Congress to destroy every institution of the states and cause all power to be consolidated and concentrated here in D.C.
Wow. Oh, my God. You know what? I'm anticipating the question from these clowns that they're going to say, well, how do we stand up against the Fed or the state capitol? And I'm going to tell them, you get yourself a constitutional sheriff in your county and you tell them to back off. That's how you do it.
Hmm.
Oh, I have an answer for these clowns. Believe me, they're not going to like what I
said.
And you know, and I've talked about this before, and of course taxes are always one of those things that get people stirred up. The first income tax was signed into law by Lincoln in 1861 with a top rate of 10% on incomes of over $10,000. It was eliminated in 1872. It was actually repealed. But establishing such a precedent, it goes on to say, undoubtedly aided the cause of income taxation, and it eventually prevailed. On July 1st, 1862, Lincoln signed a tax bill that filled more than 17 triple column pages of very fine print.
Oh, my God.
The bill contained 119 different sections imposing hundreds of excise taxes, stamp taxes, inheritance taxes, gross receipt taxes, and license taxes on virtually every occupation, service, and commodity in the entire economy.
Sounds like the 2,700-page health care bill. Oh, my God. Oh, that you know, it never ends. We got to fight them. We just got to fight them. And you know what? We have the tools, Bron. We have the tools. We just have to have the backbone. You know, that's where I'm coming from. I'm firing up my neighborhood. And
I
you know what I told
agree.
Thank
all
you.
We
I,
need
I,
is the will.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
you
it
know
takes
what else?
Is a little courage.
And you, exactly, because everybody that we're talking about, like the Sunsteins and the Jarretts and the Obamas and the Clintons, they're cowards. Believe me. I mean, when Scott Walker won in Wisconsin, I explained to Terry Rolls the other day, I said the reason he's in hiding is because Trump and Jarrett turned him black and blue in the back room, and he couldn't go out in public. They were beating the hell out of that guy. I mean, he was hating life after Scott Walker won, because that's a green light for every conservative governor in the land to do what they should do. And we even did it in two counties in California, of all places, which is the most libtard state on the planet, outside of Bloomtard, you know, arena. I mean, it's unbelievable. We can stand up to them. We have the tools. We have the constitutional sheriff. We have the law on our side. We have God on our side. And dang it, all we got to do is just say, no, we're not doing this anymore. And we stand arm in arm like Martin Luther King did, and we prevail. I don't care. They can take me out. You know, I'll go to the Lord. But I swear to you, I will take 40 with me. I'm not playing no more. I'm not playing.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I told my statistics tutor, I said, if I don't pass this time, I want to go to the South Florida campus, have a sign on a billboard sign on both sides of my front back to say, I work for food. I'm a college graduate.
I would tell them that you're going to file a discrimination suit because they're only failing you because you're Jewish.
No, that could be a possibility. That could be a possibility. But I didn't fail my first test. I did pretty good. I didn't do as good as I wanted to do. But you know, I was pleased with my score. You know, I improved from last semester. But you know, you got to take the punches. You know. Just like anything else in life.
And if you think about it, man, this phone is ringing off the wall tonight. If you think about it, Robert, your Indian half doesn't get you anywhere either, because they absolutely despise the Indians. So, you know, Tonto Goldberg, man, you got a double dose right there.
Poor Robert. We love you, Robert.
I want to quote a Democratic senator from the Lincoln administration commenting on the taxes that Lincoln passed. They don't name the guy, unfortunately.
Wow.
The government is everything.
Oh, Jesus.
It has become the end. And the people and all their property, labor, efforts, and gains are merely the means by which the government is to continue and its powers progressively augmented.
Good God. So this is how long it's been going. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Now, make no mistake, Lincoln's hero, he had two that he really elevated. One was a guy named DeVille Clinton, and the other is Henry Clay.
God.
And Henry Clay was a staunch Hamiltonian.
Wow.
And they said here that the adoption of the vaunted American system, Lincoln's career-long dream, was completed by 1863.
Jeez.
The predictions of all the opponents of Alexander Hamilton's mercantilist schemes were proven correct. The system of federalism that was created by the Founding Fathers was destroyed, and the protectionist tariff, pervasive federal taxation, and nationalized banking systems had a tremendous centralizing effect on American government.
Oh my God.
The American public was also relentlessly propagandized by the government and its private sector accomplices, such as Jay Cooke, into believing that it could now look to the federal government for solutions to its problems.
Good God. Oh, yeah, that's just great. Oh, my God. Oh,
Lord.
We're doomed.
It's unbelievable.
We're doomed.
That's a great book, man. What's the name of that book, Ron? I want to get it.
The title of the book is The Real Lincoln, A New Look at Abraham Lincoln and His Agenda.
Wow.
By DiLorenzo. Here, I've got it. I've got a link here. Let me pull it up. by DiLorenzo Thomas, or Thomas DiLorenzo. Thomas DiLorenzo. And my goodness, how I wish I had read this book before I went to the 828 rally, because after the rally, my wife and I and my father and stepmother were sitting at a little restaurant on in D.C., down in the district, the Eastern Market District. And I struck up a conversation with two ladies that were sitting at a table next to us, much to the chagrin of my company, who all departed and went back to the house because they knew once I got started flapping my jaws, it wasn't going to end anytime soon. And wouldn't you know it, these two women, one who was a screaming liberal and the other was kind of in the middle somewhere, the one lady that was in the middle was actually working on the Lincoln papers in the Library of Congress. And the other woman was studying some of the Lincoln papers. She was a professor and had written a book that she told me, you know, she told me, oh, you should check out my book. But she said most people don't buy it because it's terribly expensive. And we had a wonderful conversation about federalism, and she started talking about original intent. And I said, well, you know, that depends on what you mean by original intent. That's like people reading the Bible and, you know, 15 different right. dissertations come out of the same paragraph. So I don't believe that's the case with the Constitution. It says what it means and means what it says. There's no parables or code going right. on there. But, you know, this made it easier for future generations of politicians to convince the American public to acquiesce in further expansions of government and further restrictions on personal liberty that would have caused the founding fathers to reach for their swords.
Yep. They would, too. Oh, they would. I've said it before, but if I could get in a time machine and bring them back here, I'd have to have smelling salts because they'd faint first before I could get them to pick up their swords. I mean, this is nuts what's going on. Every time I look around, every restriction, they can't even have pumps of water out of the wells in Colorado. They've turned the San Joaquin Valley into a desert. In fact, that was in my speech. I was livid. They knew from the get-go that I was not a happy camper when I spoke.
And why? This is the thing. Why do we continue to consent? Why do people
exactly.
ask yes? Why did the governor of Arizona go and answer an erroneous charge in a federal court that had zero jurisdiction over her state?
She's out of her mind. She's out of her mind. She's incompetent or she's in on it.
Exactly. There's no middle ground. There's no splitting this.
There isn't.
You're either
isn't.
On
and
the right side of the fence or you're not.
Absolutely. And that's why when I had the great privilege of standing very close to Ron Paul speaking in my own hometown, I was amazed. It was the best speech I've ever heard. And I, on my radio show last week, I read his House Floor 2004 speech regarding the Constitution and everything else on the air because I had come across it on my Tuesday volunteering as a poll worker. And we had a very huge lull in our, you know, people coming out for the primary. So I was reading in this beginning of my pocket Constitution that it was sent to me by probably Ron Paul delegates and people. And it was so amazing. I said, I have to share this with everybody. And I did. Actually, before I got to speak, I shared it with one of my girls who's on a task force, Americans Protecting Property Rights Are Against the Gen 21 crowd. And she goes, oh, my God, this is amazing. I said, yes, yes, ma'am, it is. And this is what we have to fight for. You know, everything he said was dead on. It's like he's handling Jefferson. It's amazing.
Well, you know that's Napolitano called him the Jefferson of our day, and I have to agree with him.
He is. He's standing right in front of you. Why can't you see? You know, I know.
I feel your frustration, and it's not to hang, you know, the faith of an entire country on one man, but
I know, but he gets
why don't people at least put forth the effort to try and understand the man instead of listening to these cackling hens like Hannity and the others?
I know. You're nuts.
He's nuts. You know, get off the phone, you dope. And really, that's pretty grown up and adult.
I agree. Absolutely. It's amazing because it's the same. Every time you look at any mandate, any stupid wacko enviro status, any EPA this, any czar this, any UN unholy treaty, all of these things, why can't they see it, Ron? I'm not a college-educated person, and I see it.
Look,
I mean, they do see it, Linda.
We're assuming, and see, maybe this is part of our problem. We give the benefit of the doubt, or have given the benefit of the doubt, to one party over another, to one group over another, okay, without recognizing the cold, hard fact that both sides get it. They know how the game is played, and the only struggle going on is who gets to be in the driver's seat to suck as much money out of the sheep as they possibly can, because that's how the game is played.
Right. But what I'm saying is, let's say if I'm talking to a mayor in a local town, or I'm talking to my neighbor or somebody in a group, and I'm trying to explain something to them in the best terms that I can, and I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm trying to lay out the facts. Why can't they see it right in front of their face? It's astonishing to me. I mean, whether it's Agenda 21 or the EPA or the Wildlands Project or any of it, I don't understand. I don't know.
I think that Terry Rowland could probably give you a good answer on that. And, you know, these are the same people that, you know, it's funny, because school becomes mandatory, you know, the first thing you want to do is get the hell out of school. You can't wait until the day you graduate, right? So that you don't have to go back there anymore. Why? Because, you know, we don't put a really high value on learning. And they don't want to know. People want to be blissfully ignorant. Now, when it comes to somebody like a mayor, he knows the game. He may not understand it all, but what he does understand one thing. He gets money out of this system.
Right.
And lots of it, under the table where nobody sees it, and he kind of likes that setup.
Yep, and you know I'm about to educate mine.
Yeah, they're not going to foul their own nest. Look, I was witness to this. Watching the local GOP party down here and how they conduct their business, and they talk out of both sides of their mouth. They're just full of crap. You know, they say they're for smaller government and all of this junk, and they're over there back slapping and greasing each other's palms, and it's sickening.
I know. Exactly. When I was two or three times in my last 6 months, I have heard Councilmember Jerry Kern, who's running for mayor in November, talk about public-private partnerships, and my hair went on fire, Ron.
Well, sure.
Absolutely went on fire. And you know what? I swear to you, I'm going to – if I have to go down to that third floor and petition a one-on-one meeting with each one of these people, I swear to you, I will do it, because I'm not playing anymore. And if they want proof, I will say, look, you go to YouTube with Nancy Pelosi in the early 90s after that Rio summit in 1992, and you watch her on the House floor pushing for Agenda 21. You tell me now, this is a woman in your state what I'm telling you is a conspiracy theory. Don't even start with me. I've had it with these.
Well, I mean, it's not even a theory. It's conspiracy fact. I mean, all you've got to do is look at the list of donors to all these politicians.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, people sit and scratch their heads. Why do these big banks donate so much money to both sides of the aisle? Really, can it be? I mean, we can't be that obtuse. We've got to be smart enough to see the forest for the trees here and say, look, guys, it's all about fattening their wallets. And the reason they want to stay in power is the longer they stay in power, the more money they can funnel to their cronies, their supporters. Okay, and a private-public partnership, what the hell is that? Well, that's a real nice way of saying the government's going to funnel your money to a private company.
Right.
And then use that private company to dictate to you how you can utilize the new service that they've created with your money.
Yeah, it's corporate fascism, and I'm totally against it. And I'm going to point this out because it's all in my brochure that I'm going to make copies of. And it's like I'm so frustrated, but I've got to, if I expose what's going on and I try to educate these council members, I at the same time, I'm going to explain to them, I'm going to wake up every citizen in the state of California until they take me out, and I'm going to do it with bells on, and I'm going to be Paul Revere, and I'm going to be Lafayette wielding a sword, believe me. And they do not want to come up against me. I've had it with these people. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm trying to stand on principle.
Well,
this
yeah,
is wrong.
Exactly. And, you know, Andrew Jackson, and I've talked about him, he did end the bank. And for all his shortcomings, and he was a nasty man, he sure had no love of the Cherokee Indians and the whole Trail of Tears thing.
Yeah.
He had very little humanity in him at all. But he even understood. And, you know, there's a quote from him, "Our government is not to be maintained or our union preserved by invasions of the rights and powers of the several states. It's true, our strength consists in leaving individuals and states as much as possible to themselves, not in binding the states more closely to the center."
This is what was... when the founders did their thing and they were looking at Basquiat and John Locke and de Tocqueville and the rest of them, for God's sakes, the whole idea, even in the Federalist Papers, was that, and in our Constitution, that what is not what enumerated to that stupid federal government always devolves to the states as sovereigns and to the people.
Exactly.
Always to the people. And if we can learn that and start shouting it from the rooftop, that's our only hope. We have to explain to people, you cannot allow this totalitarian tyranny to exist.
And
I can't take it anymore.
One of the things that happened early on, actually Madison, when he was in, you know, and the War of 1812 came about, they were so pissed. The northern states, they were threatening with secession. And the reason they were threatening it is because he had placed a high tariff on imported goods from England. And there was a reason, because they were being SOBs. They were being jerks. And they were messing with our sovereignty. And he said, no, I'm not going to have it. And so he put a high tariff on their stuff so that their trade with the northern states dwindled to almost nothing. Now, the downside of that was that it really, really injured the economy in the northern states. And they resented it immensely.
Yeah.
Okay. That point, you've got all these northern states wanting to secede from the Union because the president has instituted a trade tariff that they saw as being just wholly unconstitutional and detrimental to their way of life. Fast forward to 1828 and the merciless tariff that was put on imported goods. And now the shoe is on the other foot. The southern states are suffering because most of their goods came from foreign trade. Most of what they needed wasn't available from the north. They couldn't get it from, you know, New York or Pennsylvania. They needed stuff that they couldn't get in the northern states.
Wow.
So, in effect, what happened is you had the southern states paying huge tariffs, and all that money went to the north, and guess what they were doing with it? Oh, well, you know, the big dig in Boston, you know? They were doing government improvement projects, which were hopeless failures. They all ended in nothing but absolute abject corruption. The money never went where it was supposed to. They were always over budget. This is what the war was fought over, not slavery.
God.
Slavery was a political hot button issue. Okay,
right.
They were able to use it. There were only about 2% of the population of the North that were abolitionists.
Oh, my God.
The rest could care less. And in fact, their abject fear was that if slavery ended, those black folks might want to move up north. We don't want that.
Right.
Lincoln actually put together a plan to send all the slaves, all the blacks, either to Haiti, Africa, or Liberia.
Yep. That's
and in fact, Liberia, that's how it came to be.
Oh, my God.
Liberia means liberated.
Oh, my God.
And it was absolutely 100% made up of freed slaves.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So, Ron.
Yes, sir.
What you just explained to us sounds like Obama's Greentop's plan.
Yep. Can you
it's
spell
the same
Palindra?
Thing in different clothing. Look, it's been going on since 1860. It was going on before that, but it was a real struggle because they had opposition in government.
Sure. And you know what? That's why Glenn Beck said that we haven't had free market capitalism since the mid 1800s.
And he's absolutely correct, because what happened is once Lincoln came to power, what he did is he used the war as a tool. He knew that Fort Sumter was the catalyst, if you will.
Oh my God.
The southern states pooled their money and sent a delegation to Congress, to the White House, and offered to pay to purchase Fort Sumter and to pay whatever portion Lincoln assessed against them for their share of whatever the national debt would be. He refused to speak with them.
Wow.
They went back empty-handed. Now, everyone knew Fort Sumter was in the Confederate territories now.
Right.
And they were offering to purchase all the federal property that was in the southern territories. And so where everybody got the real bone of contention was Fort Sumter. And everyone was worried because there was still a military contingent stationed there, and they were running low on supplies. And Lincoln said that he was not going to resupply Fort Sumter.
Wow.
And then he put together a flotilla of naval ships, military ships, and sailed them right into Charleston Harbor under the guise of resupplying Fort Sumter. He knew that the Southern Confederates would have no choice but to fire on them. He knew it.
Wow.
So he could sit back all benevolent and say, well, I didn't fire the first shot, and see, they're an insurrection. They're a rebellion. I don't need Congress. And so now I can go wage war. And what he did once he put troops on the march, they didn't all go south. Many of them went north. And they went north to seize control of a few selected newspaper outlets, along with the entire state legislature of Maryland and Rhode Island, to make sure that not a word was whispered in opposition to his undertakings.
Oh my God.
And he was able to buy the elections and put his party in absolute power.
Oh my God.
And then
what
he faced no opposition at all from Congress. Matter of fact, he only vetoed four pieces of legislation in his two terms.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Oh, now I understand your colorful language against him.
I'm telling
you.
Wow. He was the alpha and the omega of the destruction of this country.
Good God.
He is personally responsible for what we have today.
Oh,
and
my God.
We are personally responsible for not knowing all of this and not demanding that we get back to what this country was supposed to be and stop settling for the status quo.
Yeah, we're settling for all this stuff that I'm fighting. This is not right, and you're right. Oh, my God. Well, the word will get out, believe me. The word will get out.
Yes, sir.
How much money does the government really owe us to?
Well, you know, that's just it. They've absolutely, Robert, they have absolutely robbed this country of its productivity.
Yes. Yeah, we're in serfdom.
The production.
It's horrible.
The production that comes from the hands of all of these people in this country today, scarcely three pennies on the dollar goes towards betterment of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all gets diverted. And what they can't steal through taxation, they borrow and run up a huge debt.
It's so heinous.
Yeah.
I do believe, Ron, that these people will not be lenient under God. He's not going to be lenient with them when he judges them.
Well, I certainly won't purport to know his mind, but I pray that he is merciful on them, because. Mm-hmm. I want that same mercy for my judgment.
Absolutely. You know, but I don't think you're in the realm of the Luciferian people.
No, that's probably true. I posted the link again for that book.
Yeah.
And it's on Amazon.com. And even if you don't have a Kindle or an iPad,
right?
If you look over on the left-hand corner below the book, you'll see that you can download a free Kindle reading app for your computer.
Okay.
So that instead of going to the store and paying $70 or $20 for a book, you can buy it online in the Kindle mm-hmm. edition and read it on your computer.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this show. This has just been so enlightening, and I know you're kind of running out of time, so... I'm going to go back to the chat room, and God bless this family. Thanks for calling in, Robert. It's always a pleasure, and I'm not sure who's in the chat room, but thank you so much. And I'm going to keep fighting.
Keep on fighting. Thank you for that email. I read your email today that you sent me.
I can't remember which one it was.
about the patient denying medical, got denied.
Oh, my Lord. That was from my Vista Tea Party Patriots. Oh, my God. Yeah, I sent it to everybody in my list.
That was a terrible story. Very sad.
It's coming. The insurrection is coming. So lock and load, guys. Anyway, God bless you, Ron, for all you do, and thank you for informing us. And I will get that book within the next couple of weeks, during my travels of going out and fighting against these evil guys. But thank you so much, and God bless this whole family. Thank you.
God bless you for calling in and everything that you're doing out there against Agenda 21. And I apologize in advance because you're probably not going to have any hair left when you start reading this book. You're going to be tearing it out by the handfuls.
That's why they have wig shops.
Absolutely. Well, that was the Whig Party before it was the Democratic Republicans.
Okay, guys. Love you.
God bless you. Robert, thank you for calling in. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Ron.
And, I want to thank you, too, for all the work that you do, with people with, to be politically correct, special needs. It takes a real heart to work with people like that. I used to work at a nursing home, and it's really easy to become very emotionally attached to people.
Oh man, don't I know it.
And it's got to be a labor of love, and God bless you for doing it, sir.
I appreciate it. I tell you what, they just arrived here, too. They just walked in as we're speaking.
Well, outstanding. Well, Robert, I appreciate you calling in, and you have a blessed evening and a blessed week.
And Ron.
Tell Miss Kathy and your lady friend there that I said hello and God bless them.
Rod says hello and says God bless. And they say the same to you, and I'm saying, let today go.
Absolutely. And I'm going to I'm going to close this out with one of my favorite tunes of late. And I just want to put a caveat on this song that it's not just about the man. It's about the idea. And he has started a fire in this country, a grassroots grass fire. And we need to make sure that we remain focused on restoring our government to its constitutional boundaries where it belongs. God bless you guys.
Take care, Ron.
Imagine how great a nation we'd have if we didn't have the Federal Reserve System printing all this money.